Hi, welcome to This Expat Life. My name is Amanda Maxime, and as a certified coach, I help high-achieving expats find more fulfillment and happiness in their global lives. Because while life abroad is often amazing, it is not only rainbows and butterflies, as all experienced expats know. In This Expat Life, I open up space for all facets of life abroad and what you can do to thrive in it. And to support you in your personal, professional, and geographic life transitions, I share tips, tell relatable stories, and connect with fellow expats. Whether you've just moved abroad or you are a seasoned expat, This Expat Life is your place to find real understanding and to grow from the inside out. Enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of This Expat Life. Today I'm joined by another guest. Josh and his wife, Callie, moved abroad in 2009 and never looked back. After starting in Spain, they moved to South Korea, Saudi Arabia, and Singapore to round out their international experience before heading back to Europe in the form of Portugal. And in the middle of that, they saw immigration and adaptation patterns appear, and they formed Expats Everywhere to help others move abroad like themselves. And their newest challenge is real estate, investing in their current host country, Portugal. And that's what I'll be talking about today with Josh. Welcome, Josh.
Amanda, how are you doing? It's good to be here.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, I hope so. So I always like to start, but I already know the answer, but I'd like to ask this question to everyone. Where are you calling in from right now?
I am calling in from Porto, Portugal.
Nice. And how long have you...
Porto, Portugal.
Ah, vamos falar português. Está tudo bem? I heard you've been practicing Portuguese for 2 hours a day since this week or very shortly.
Yeah. So my wife and I have been living here for three and a half years, and we've been doing an e-course. And the e-course doesn't give you a certification like A1, A2, B1, B2. It doesn't give you a certification. We were just trying to learn the language. But then as we're approaching possible citizenship here, it's required to have at least A2 level. And we're doing this online course that we have a teacher, we go through a standard book, and we have 2 hours every day, Monday through Friday, 15 weeks, and we'll be A2 certified.
Wow.
Let's go.
Yeah. Wow. That's quite an effort you have to put in because it takes a lot of your time. So well done.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you said that you've been living in Porto right 2.5 years. You said or 3.5?
Yeah. Three and a half.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So can you share a little bit more about your journey? What got you to Portugal and why Portugal and how permanent maybe also this decision is to live there right now?
Yeah, sure. So I appreciate this question. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to skip some of the stuff in between for sake of brevity. But okay. In 2009, my wife and I moved to Spain and we moved to Madrid. And I was doing a program there through a university about bilingual multicultural education. So essentially, I was making some first steps to becoming a teacher. And while living in Spain, I had never been to Portugal, and my wife and I traveled to Portugal. We loved it. We were like, we actually like this vibe a little better than we like in Spain. Mm-hmm. One day we're going to live in Portugal. And at the time, really, it was quite challenging for Americans, especially not only to move to Europe, but to move to Portugal and get a visa. There weren't very many. And as we were becoming teachers, it was much more preferred to have British teachers. It was easier pre-Brexit for Brits to get a job in Portugal because they were all like one love EU. And we found that it was going to be really challenging for us to do that. And we didn't have the certifications yet to work in an international school. The jobs didn't pay very well, but we still had this idea. One day we'll live in Portugal. And then fast forward to us leaving our jobs in Asia and wanting to kind of make a life, at least try to make a life out of our social media business, Expats Everywhere. And we saw this D7 visa, and the D7 visa at the time, was like living on your own financial means, and it didn't have to be passive income. It could be active income, but it's sourced outside of Portugal. It's, yeah. you know, like foreign sourced. Now that's all changed. All that immigration stuff has changed. But we moved here, being able to survive off of like rental income from real estate and then also expats everywhere income.
Amazing.
But it was basically like, we're fascinated with Portugal, and we love the people here. Absolutely love the people here. And the pastel de nata is such an amazing dessert. Let's go.
Yeah. I can get it here as well. It makes me very happy.
Yeah. Well, we can get coxinha here. So thank you for that. And acai.
Yeah. Also, I actually love that you said, you know, that a couple of years ago, you already felt like, we want to live in Portugal, and then you just know it's going to happen. Did you have that with the other countries as well? Or was it just Portugal that had this pull for you?
Portugal had the pull for us. Well, you know, I take that back in a sense that Singapore also called us a bit, very quickly. But we had that first in Portugal, where the first time we visited Porto, we were like, this is it. This is our vibe. This is our city. Like, there's something magical about the city. Some people get it, some people don't.
Yeah.
We got it. But we were living in Saudi Arabia. Don't ask me the year. I want to say it was like 2014, 2015. And we had just been surrounded by beige. Like, the buildings are beige, it's dusty, it's, you know, sandy.
Yeah.
And we took a trip to Southeast Asia. And on that trip, we went to Malaysia, Singapore, and Indonesia. And we were just like, wow, it's so green here. It's so lush. It's so beautiful. And I think that kind of spoke to us. We also saw people like walking their dogs and holding hands, which public displays of affection in Saudi aren't the norm. And we had that kind of calling from Singapore. And actually, I think it was the first night we were there in the hotel, I started searching for jobs. My wife didn't know this, but I was like on the bed with a laptop on my lap. And I'm like, all right, how can we work here? But
amazing. And so you kind of didn't answer the last part of my question. And that was, how permanent is Porto for you now?
I was hoping we were going to avoid this question.
No.
I'm just kidding. You got to let me off the hook.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we approached coming to Portugal as not being our forever place, because I think we've always viewed ourselves as expats, and in that we want to go somewhere temporary, but we never said how long it would be.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple. Let's say like milestones that we could hit that would have us stay and also have us leave.
Yeah.
One being that 5 years living in Portugal and you're eligible for citizenship.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that definitely makes sense for us. It makes sense for us that we have a 4-year-old daughter who can also get citizenship. We do now have a love for the country and would be really proud to be Portuguese citizens. But then there's also, on the other spectrum, there's a milestone that is a special tax regime that they had here in Portugal when we first moved. It was called NHR. And NHR is a tax regime where if you're making foreign sourced income that falls into like certain categories, then it's taxed at a lower rate than if you're a regular tax paying citizen. And this applied for both foreigners and for Portuguese people who are living outside of Portugal to incentivize them to come back home. But that's good for 10 years. So we haven't actually explored yet what our tax situation is going to look like after 10 years. So we've always kind of said between the 5 and 10 year range is kind of how long we'll be here. I do have a sneaking suspicion that at someday we will end up back in Portugal, like for good.
Yeah.
But it's too hard to tell. Like when we're in our 60s, 70s, something like that.
So you still have a few adventures to have in between.
We do. And then there's the complication of the fact that we've started a real estate development and there's a completion date that has. And we want to live in the place as well. We don't want to finish it and then move abroad right after.
That's actually that was going to be my next question, because You know, some expats buy real estate to as an investment, and I've certainly been interested in that myself, and to rent it out. And others, like yourself, I guess, they buy something, build something to really live in that place. I actually have a coachee who's doing the exact same thing right now. So can you share a little bit about how that decision came about for you guys?
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you use the term investment, because I think that it is important to make a distinction between what is an investment and what is a property that you live in.
Yeah.
This is a weird hybrid, but I'm going to say that and try to not contradict myself. So I'll just be upfront and say to your audience that I do believe that there are much better markets to invest in than Portugal. And if you have American and Canadian listeners, I think that the US and Canada are two phenomenal real estate markets, because they're stable, politically stable, despite what people think about the politics. But I mean, when it comes to real estate investing, they're stable in that sense. They have really predictable rates of return, good rates of return compared to investing internationally. I think what happens a lot of times investing internationally is you have high growth markets, but those high growth markets can have a lot of risk carried. Yeah. You also have some stable markets, but those stable markets have very low growth potential. I do think that we've seen a bit of a phenomenon over the past, like, I don't know, like maybe some pre-COVID, post-financial crisis in 2008, pre-COVID, and then during the COVID period, where housing prices globally have shot up, cost of living globally has shot up. So therefore, like, people's investments have really shot up. But I don't think that this is the norm. I think this is like we're in a bit of a weird cycle. Mm. So bringing it back to Portugal, the investment here is one where we are going to be living in the place, but we do see growth potential and want to invest in the community rather than just investing our dollars into euros and then hoping to pull something back out. We certainly don't want to lose money and don't believe we will. But we also were seeing a bunch of old buildings in the city, and it's like, it'd be so cool as a part of legacy to like get one of these bad boys and fix it up.
Yeah. Amazing. So is that what you're doing right now? You got one of these bad boys and you're fixing it up?
Yeah. And it was a bad boy, let me tell you. So we had this crazy idea with our YouTube community on Expats Everywhere, where we wanted to identify a building in our favorite neighborhood in Porto that we could buy under market value and fix it up at a set price, and then have other people in our community invest with us so that we could avoid like bank loans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then also just kind of have a vertical community. I mean, that's the name that we kept calling it.
Yeah.
It didn't end up panning out just like that, where people were simply investing with us. We didn't form a company or anything. The development side, we basically found a house after a whole year of searching for the right property.
Oh, wow.
It took a while. It took a long time to find a place that would tick all the boxes that we tried, that we set out. We had a buy box, if you will. And mm-hmm. it's like, it needs to meet this criteria for us to do it.
Yeah.
We had to be flexible with some of the categories, but by and large, we hit what we were looking for. And the main one was price and development price. So we're happy that we hit that. And it's funny, like in that time, the value of properties rose significantly. So the value of the property that people have bought in early, like pre-construction, they're going to come out having a property that's probably 50% more valuable, anywhere between 30 and 50% more valuable.
Wow.
So the process to identify the place was long, and we just leveraged the love and support from our community to find buyers to help us fund this project.
Amazing. And that's what you're going to live in, that property.
Yep. So the building, Yeah, so the building is currently on one of the streets. So there's two entrances to the property. On the main street, it is it's a pretty standard like Porto style building where it's narrow, it's long, it's a couple stories high. We got permitted to go 2.5 more levels up, so it's going to be 5 stories, and it'll have a basement. And then there's a like an inner courtyard. And then on the other side, the other facade, if you will, there's a pretty narrow garage. And in that area, we're able to build a semi-detached unit. And after a lot of shuffling and everything, it ended up being that my wife and I would take this semi-detached area, which is going to be the most awkward and interesting space in the development, but it also might have been the most challenging one to sell. But in the end, with all the shuffling around of people that wanted to buy, we just decided to take that back one because the other ones were more conventional, easier to sell.
Okay, cool. Okay, so you mentioned that you were looking for this property for over a year. And I can imagine if you are an expat, or you live abroad, or you want to live abroad, and you're thinking about buying, like, and especially if the runway towards the purchase is so long, you've got to be sure of your decision to either stay there or to use the property as investment. I have personally thought about buying something myself abroad, just because I've always loved the idea. I decided that this is not the right time, and one of the things that held me back was like, I'm not sure if this is the right investment for me now. I'm not sure where I want to live. So how did you guys deal with like your mindset around it and overcoming these doubts? Because I'm sure you had them as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of what we did, and this is a really good question. It's a really good thing to think about. I think a lot of what we did is we took a look at historically where prices are and where prices were and what the common trajectory is. So we knew that we did not want to get into a property that was above a certain price per square meter. And once we established that, we realized that it was going to be a secure investment. I mean, as secure as I do rabbit ears, as secure as possible. We knew that if we didn't pass that threshold, then we shouldn't be losing money on the deal. And this goes back to the whole investing versus living in the property. We saw rent prices getting a bit unpredictable here and on the rise, and we thought, well, what would it look like if we owned our own property, had a mortgage on it, and we were paying the mortgage versus paying rent? We could get a lot more property for the same amount of money, and we just decided to go for it. You know, we decided that it made sense for us at this point in time. We had enough experience in real estate investing in the US. We knew the fundamentals of real estate investing. So I think in that regard, it alleviated a lot of our fears of what could potentially go wrong.
So prior experience already helped you to feel more secure and to have like these objective parameters in a way that will tell you, okay, this is a good investment. We will not lose any money on this. It's
Yeah,
still,
100%.
however,
Like, set the criteria of what you're going to buy based on historical data, you know? Like, is this neighborhood stable even? Like, you can get even more granular, not just city or country, not city, but neighborhood. Is this neighborhood stable? What's the trend in this neighborhood? Well, at the time when we started looking, we were looking in the cheapest neighborhood price per square meter. And like, you know, you could see that in the data that was produced, that this was the cheapest place. You could also see culturally in the neighborhood that it was starting to change. It was starting to be gentrified, if you will. I'm going to use that word in a neutral sense. It's a trigger word for some people. But we realized that, okay, this is where it's at the bottom, and it's not going to go any lower than this. So, you know, we were comfortable with it.
Yeah, okay. And I can imagine, like, you chose a Euro country, so that also brings some stability. I've been thinking about buying something in Brazil, and I realized, no, I'm not going to do that because I don't have the financial means at the moment to have multiple properties or multiple investments, and I don't want to have all my eggs in the reais basket, the currency of Brazil, because it's so
Yes.
fluctuating. Did you take that
Yes.
into account as well, the currency exchange rate?
Well, we took it into account in so much that we wanted to run numbers based on, again, historical average, knowing that there would be fluctuation. Now, we have had kind of a period where the dollar to euro parity hasn't been as great as it is historically.
Yes.
So it's kind of fun. It's really funny meeting people that moved when it was almost on par, where it was like 1 to 1, $1 to
Yeah.
1 euro, and then now it's like 1.08, 1.09 USD to euro, and they're
Yeah.
complaining. But it's like you have to realize the historical average is like
Yeah.
1.18, 1.20.
Yeah.
So it's still cheaper in a sense than what it normally is. What you were talking about with AIs reminded me so much of us looking at a property investment in Cape Town, and they have the rand, and the rand it fluctuates wildly. And at the time we were looking at an investment in South Africa, we had just about enough money to do this property deal. Spoiler alert, we didn't, but the deal essentially was so great because the dollar to rand was at like a historical low. It was
Yeah.
bad, and it's only gotten worse.
Oh.
So the investment could have been good in one sense, in that if we had paid over a long period of time dollars into rands to purchase the building, it would have been in our favor. But had we dropped all the cash into it straight away, then the value of the property that we bought would have dropped, if
Yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm glad we didn't do it. South Africa is highly unstable in that
Yeah.
regard.
Yeah.
And
You mentioned
Brazil's
stability
not much better.
before. No, I know. And I mean, I met some people who are like, oh, they bought Europeans who bought apartments here and they rented out because there's really no Airbnb restrictions here as we have in Europe. So, you know, it's a good investment short term. It brings you in some cash. And I know other people who are really raving about Rio, but I'm just like, nah, I don't think I'm gonna do that. And another thing that's been holding me back was also that one, I don't know anything. Like, I've got my own property in the Netherlands, and like any renovations was already too much for me. It's not something I enjoy. I didn't have the headspace to deal with anything else, but also to deal with renovations or certain challenges that just come with purchasing or building a home in another country, in another language. Like, oh, it was just to me for yeah, too much for me to take on right now. So how do you guys deal with that? You're learning Portuguese now, so how's that going for you?
This is an amazing question, and one that needs to like would need to be covered in even more depth than I'm going to give. But basically, one of the fundamentals of real estate that we learned while in the US is the importance of team. And that's not some like crazy acronym. I mean, like literally having a team that you have to rely on to handle certain functions of your property.
Yeah.
There are certain parts of your real estate investment journey that you're going to be able to cover yourself. If you're a handyman, yeah, you could probably jump in and like start doing renovation yourself. But if you're not, then you'll need to hire somebody to do that. Well,
Yeah.
we approached it the same way, where we knew that we needed a good real estate agent, we needed a good loan officer, we needed a good lawyer, and we needed a good contractor. So we started to search to make like basically a band of rock stars, and we took on recommendations. We met people. We saw who we connected with. Just because if you connect with people, it makes communication easier. It makes things a bit more kind
Yeah.
of honest and upfront. And we believe that we actually have a rock star team. Construction here in Portugal is slow, so there are certain cultural things that, as an American, for sure, like I have to breathe, I have to slow down. I have to know when to push them. But also have to know when, like, yeah, this is just the pace of things. So I think the biggest thing there is pick your team. Know that you have to pick a team, but also, like, pick your team. Don't try to do everything yourself.
And it will not work. Yeah, I mean, there's so much. You need to trust other people as well. I mean, when I was reading about real estate in Brazil, the first things that people say is like, go to that notary, check this, check that, because they might not even have the right to sell the property, or the land isn't theirs, or whatever. And so you have to trust also the team that you're working with. So like you said, connect with them. So there's a bit more trust already. Go to recommendations other people have given you. I have to admit, like, these things, well, I was looking at Latin America, right? So there is corruption here. There is, it's even probably
I wouldn't invest in Latin America.
It's probably even slower here than in Portugal. Like, there's just a lot of things that aren't up to certain levels that I'm used to in Europe. And it always, even though, like, I would love to have something in Latin America, not just as investment, but really because I feel at home here. This is my continent. I would love to have something here, a place to call home. But seeing all those challenges and obstacles on the way has always stopped me from making a move. And I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a go-getter. Like, whenever I'm sure I want something, I'll go get it. And this is the one thing that I just feel like, this is out of my league. This is too much for me to deal with. And so I love that you guys were like, no, we're going to do this, even though it takes us a year or longer, if you take in the construction as well. We'll just get a team and then step by step do it. So maybe this is more a question for myself, but like, what are some of...
I hear it coming.
What are some of the benefits of having the home that makes you like want to jump over those obstacles and hurdles that can pull you over it, that really make the dream so attracting that you're willing to take on those risks and the extra effort you have to put into it?
Okay. Let me first say this. I really have to encourage you, because of your curiosity in investing in Brazil and Latin America. If you have not started to talk to local investors, you need to get involved in a group. I assume that there's real estate meetups or whatever, but start to find out some of that historical data, some of those trends that are happening, because it's going to build your confidence.
Yeah.
Because like right now, you know what you don't know, and that gives you fear.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But you don't have the information to allow you to like start to get more courage.
Yeah.
Knowing this is a good deal, this is a bad deal. This is why I should invest. This is why I shouldn't invest.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Thanks for answering the question you thought I was going to ask.
That's exactly what I thought you were going to ask. I heard it in there. You just didn't want to ask it.
Yeah.
So I think for us, just we have been living abroad since 2009 and not had a house to call our own. When we have to hang up, for people that are able to watch this, when we have to hang up this neon sign behind me, we had to ask our landlord, you know, and when we take it down, we have to patch it up and we have to paint, you know, it's those types of things that, at some point become a nuisance. And especially for us, like having competence in purchasing houses and having done it multiple times, we're not scared to. So we knew that we wanted to take a leap and have ownership of a property and be able to like almost have a legacy. Like I mentioned that word earlier, but like I view buildings, structures that are in cities, important cities, as being like really pieces of legacy, because they're going to outlast us in some form or fashion. Certainly the land will. So yeah, legacy.
Yeah. I love that. And I'm sure it makes you feel so like you belong more to a certain country, or is this just my own coloring?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, I said that earlier, like we wanted to give back. We wanted to invest in the place, not just investing in an exchange for dollars, for euros. And then when we sell it, we get money back. No, we want to invest in the place and the people.
Yeah.
So it's hugely, hugely important, but it sounds like you feel the same way for Brazil, like the way you've already described it, there's a longing.
Absolutely. I feel so at home in Brazil. And I do have to say, after being here now for 5 months in Rio, it's slowed down a little bit. But I love this country, but mostly I love this continent. So it's also in Spanish Latin America that I feel super at home. One day it's going to happen. This property somewhere in Latin America. You already gave me a really useful tip to just like get in groups, surround myself with people who are doing it, to just, you know, be surrounded in this with these terms and this data so I can get a sense already. What are some other tips you might have for me or for my listeners who are interested in buying something abroad?
I think it all comes down to just educating yourself, really, because that education is going to give you the analytics that you need to make sure that you're buying a good deal. Like, if the numbers don't work and you're interested in the numbers working, because some people, they just buy a dream home. Like, it doesn't matter the cost. They'll go over budget. If that's you, fine. Like, I'd never judge a person that wants to buy their dream home and like money's not an object. But if you are looking at it as an investment, or you don't want to lose money on the deal, let's say,
yeah,
I think education is important. There are certainly books that you can read. A lot of them are going to be geared towards the American, or at least North American, markets because of the fundamentals of real estate that happen there. And then getting around other people that are doing the same thing, and then finding your team. Like, those are literally the fundamentals of good, sound real estate. Know your numbers, run your numbers. What does that look like? There are calculators out there that you can punch in the different numbers, whether it's like purchase price, expected renovations, legal fees to close on the property, licensing fees if you're going to do big renovations that need licensing. What else? You know, all those. Like, if you're going to get a mortgage on the property, then what are your mortgage expenses going to be? And you punch that into a calculator, and then it will tell you basically like what your ROI is going to be.
Yeah.
Are you going to be in the positive? Are you going to be in the negative? Because sometimes on the surface, a property looks great. And then you start to actually punch in the numbers and you're like, whoa, like I'm in the negative here. This is not in the black. This is in the red.
Yeah.
What did I do something wrong? You know, the danger sometimes with those calculators, and I want to warn you or your listener, is sometimes we want something so bad that we can convince ourselves to tweak the numbers a bit. And we started out conservative and now we get a bit liberal with the numbers. Don't like, be confident in your numbers. Know what your numbers should be. Be confident in them. Don't change them for the sake of the deal, just to make it work and justify it for yourself.
Yeah. So take the emotion out and look at the data as a scientist. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because numbers don't lie. Like, if you're looking at it not as your dream home, but as an investment, numbers don't lie. Use the numbers.
Yeah. Amazing.
And don't speculate on prices going up. Because it's dangerous.
These numbers do work, however, if the market is stable, I guess, because if you have a more volatile housing market, or I don't know, in the Netherlands, I think all the prices will continue to go up, as just to give an example, but I'm not an expert, but there was a little drop, I think, a year ago. But just because we don't have enough houses, I think it's going to go up, the prices. But you, to run those numbers, you need to be fairly certain of some stability, right? Otherwise it's more speculation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are market factors that can change. And I think that we've seen a lot over the past couple of years. We've seen it with COVID. We saw it when the war in Ukraine started.
Exactly. The
Israel Hamas war didn't seem to do much, because maybe we're already right. We're still riding the shock of what happened in Ukraine, at least here in Europe. And it happened in the States as well. Like, there were supply chain issues that forced prices of materials up. The problem we're having now in Portugal is actually materials have stabilized, but it's the labor costs that have skyrocketed.
Yeah.
So people are like, why is it so expensive per square meter to buy this new property? Well, it's because the actual cost in that thing continues to rise, even though materials are now stable. labor. People are being more discriminatory towards what jobs they take. And I mean, when I say people, I mean the laborers, the construction workers. They're saying like, I'll take that job in 6 months or a year. I don't need it right now because I've got this other project and they're paying me X. So if you want me, you need to pay me Y. So now that boom, creates more and more. And it's just doing this right now.
Okay. So you all have to take that into account. So it's know your numbers, educate yourself, I think, and have your team. Or am I missing one?
That's it. And they all kind of happen around the same time. Like you can work, it doesn't have to be a linear thing. You can work on all of those things at the same time. I think what tends to happen is you start to do networking and then you and reading, and then you find your rock stars.
Yeah.
And you ask people, you know, who their go-to mortgage broker is or realtor or lawyer.
Yeah. Great. Okay. I love this, actually. I love that you shared. I definitely feel more excited now about this dream that I still have. One day it's going to happen. And you're right. I just need to start educating myself to make it less scary and to feel more confident in this process. I always like to round up the interview with a final question for all my interviewees. And the question is, what is your number one hack to make living abroad easier or more fun?
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I've got to be honest. The first thing that popped into my mind was, and this is going to be bad for your singles out there, but I think doing it with someone else, I think like doing this whole living abroad thing with someone else. And obviously it doesn't have to be like a life partner. It could be a friend. And in fact, I had the courage initially to consider moving abroad before I met my wife. I was going to move abroad with a friend of mine. We were going to both go do a TEFL certification and then start our teaching careers. So that's what sparked me initially.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, that friend backed out around the same time that my girlfriend at the time, future wife, came into the picture. And so she kind of took their place. But my wife and I talk about it a lot. I don't think that we would have had the courage or fortitude or self-reliance if we had done it on our own. We'll never know. Maybe we would have, but boy, it was so much easier. We looked around at our single friends at some of the problems they were having. And a lot of it was down to the fact that they didn't have someone there that they could talk to, bounce ideas off of. And
I definitely feel that, because like in this property journey, for example, like I think I would love to share it with someone because it makes it easier. It takes off the load a little bit. I guess there's also like positive sides to being single, because you don't have to worry about someone else and you can decide whatever you want to do. You don't have to take the other person's opinion into account. But I understand what you say. And it's probably the most difficult tip to apply that I've heard, because it's not always in your own power. Yeah, but it's a good one to take into account. Yeah. And if you cannot find a partner to do that with, like find your tribe somehow, right? So
online,
find friends who are on the same boat. Just find your people. And I've been connecting my coaches and some of my followers all like through events and things that I organize. And they're always so relieved knowing, oh, I'm not the only one going through this. So
I think that's the real thing out there. It's like if you have at least one other person that is feeling your pain and that shared experience, we're people. We're not meant to be isolated.
Exactly.
So totally agree.
Good. Okay. Great tip. Josh, where can we find you if we want to know more about you, your life in Portugal, real estate? What do you have for us?
Yeah. So we have started a new YouTube channel specifically for this real estate journey, and it's called Let's Get Building with Josh and Kaylee.
Okay.
So you can find this on YouTube there. And in general, we post stuff about our lives on Expats Everywhere. So that's on YouTube, on Facebook, on Instagram. We kind of keep our community up to date on what's happening kind of in our world, both privately or personally, I should say, and professionally. So people can find us there. But certainly if they're interested in the real estate, then they can find us with Let's Get Building with Josh and Kaylee. And this week we started our second development. So that's going to be a little coming soon. Yeah.
Nice. Okay, I'll sure
not even finish with the first one, but
nice.
We're
Very nice.
starting our second. Yeah.
Very nice. Cool. I'll definitely follow your journey. I'll put it in the show notes
Thanks.
as well so people can see it. Josh, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really loved having you and hearing about your experience and really boosting my interest in this topic. So thank you very much and talk to you soon.
Amanda, thank you. This is day one for you. Let's go.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.